Well, hello there. Oh, I've got lots of letters for Santa today. And every year, they're the same. Some ask for toys, but a lot ask questions.
A yo-yo?
If you wish to give me a present?
I'd like to be a dentist.
Did you ever hear of that terrible year way back before you were born? When Santa Claus took a holiday on the night before Christmas morn.
It was a year without a Santa Claus, a Christmas Eve so sad. It was a year without a Santa Claus, the worst we've ever had.
Santa woke up one day looking tuckered and gray, and this is what he said.
I could sure use some rest. I'm not feeling my best.
And he yawned as he took to his bed.
There'll be a year without a Santa Claus.
You know what?
I'm sure they won't miss.
As you can guess, this is a Christmas Specials We Love podcast. And it's our salute to the year without a Santa Claus. Many would call this their favorite, maybe the goat of all Rankin Bass. Probably we'll discuss that tonight, but my goodness. I hear this theme song because I know everyone is crazy for the Heat Miser and the Snow Miser theme song, so am I. However, one of the more underrated openings, and I feel like just a shout out to Shirley Booth. Shirley Booth, a.k.a. Hazel, for all you youngins out there. But she.
That's right, Mr. B.
Yes. Christian and Kelsey, all of us here today to discuss the year without a Santa Claus. Okay, you guys, there's a lot to unpile with this. And why don't we get right into production notes and production history?
Perfect.
We'll go scene by scene.
So much to cover with this iconic Rankin and Bass holiday classic. I mean, Mickey Rooney is Santa and Shirley Booth is Mrs. C. This one was destined to be one for the ages. Produced by Rankin and Bass Productions, the stop-motion animated Christmas special was originally broadcast on December 10th, 1974 on ABC. This was Rankin and Bass's seventh Christmas special, preceded by Santa Claus Has Come to Town in 1970, and 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, released just 2 days before on December 8th, 1974, with Joel Grey narrating as Joshua Trundell.
Yes, you don't remember that, do you? No.
At all. Do you guys?
Absolutely. Do you remember, Christian?
The only 'Twas the Night Before Christmas I remember is animated. So I don't
remember. Yes, that's it. That's the one.
Oh, that's that one? Yes.
It is animated, right? Very underrated Christmas special. And in fact, I never knew that Rankin and Bass did it, but that doesn't surprise me. So in the weeks or the years to come, hopefully on this show, we'll have to cover it. But interesting. Yeah,
for sure. Year Without a Santa Claus was aired on broadcast TV annually on ABC and then later on CBS. Starting in 2018, AMC began airing it each year as part of their Best Christmas Ever block. Warner Brothers Entertainment, who owns the rights, has distributed it through the Disney-owned ABC Family as part of their 25 Days of Christmas programming block. Based on a poem written by Phyllis McGinley and published in a 1956 issue of Good Housekeeping magazine, it received such positive feedback, it went on to be published as a book in 1957. Ironically, that's the same year that Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas was published. A few quick notes on Phyllis. She was born in 1905, was educated to be a teacher. She married in 1937 and moved to New York. In 1955, she was elected to the National Academy of Arts and Letters and won a Pulitzer Prize in 1961. She passed away in February of 1978.
Interesting that 4 years, I was thinking of this, I've never heard of her. I did not know this was based on a short story. So, and the fact that this woman at least got to see this produced in 4 years before she passed. That's cool. And there wasn't much more information on her other than I know she did write another Christmas story somewhere in her, right?
She wrote a later book called How Mrs. Claus Saved Christmas, Kev. And that was probably the inspiration for the Mrs. Claus in this special.
Right, because in this one, the only carryovers character-wise are Santa and Iggy Ignatius Thistlethwaite. Other than that, everyone else, Rankin and Bass made up, which is amazing, you know, but they did that. But still, at the same time, it's very cool.
It is cool. And yeah, that's a cool story that I didn't think of either, that she got to see this like at the end of her life, or like her story come to life. Like, what a magic moment for her.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, you're a poet, and that, you know, in poetry, you know, back then in poetry, I don't know, especially by the 70s, it was kind of on the way down. I don't know, Christian, would you agree with that? You know, poetry's.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was the era where the only Christmas poems were known was, you know, Allen Ginsberg's Christmas Carol. You know, I mean, I think that might be the only thing. No, I don't think there was a lot of poetry. But, you know, that's why so many of these stories are that got turned into specials, or, you know, like 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. I mean, that was decades before this, you know, so I don't think that there was a lot of contemporary poetry at this point, you know.
Very cool, though. Go ahead.
Very cool. And it's funny you mentioned 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, Christian, since the reindeer names came from that poem written in 1823 by, of course, Clement Moore.
So she kept those. You have no Rudolph, because we've talked about that, the copyright issues.
Right. In 1968, 6 years before the Rankin and Bass special first aired, horror icon Boris Karloff of Frankenstein fame recorded a narrated version of the book for a Capitol Records promotional LP. This is one of Karloff's final performances, as he passed away just a few months later in February of 69.
And, you know, I found out he ended up, one Rankin or Bass had to fly to him because he was sick, and they brought a recorder to him.
Oh.
And he had shingles, you know.
Okay.
I never knew any of this. That there was an audio version. I actually listened to it, and it's very cool to hear the narrator of Dr. Seuss's The Grinch be doing A Year Without a Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Very cool. Yeah. Also, a live action remake featuring John Goodman as Santa, Michael McKean as the Snow Miser, and Harvey Fierstein as the Heat Miser. Oh, gosh. Premiered on December 11th.
Okay, wait a second. This is in 2006. Christian, and have you seen this? Ever.
I did not realize that this had happened.
Okay, so we will have to cover at some point. I think mandatory, but yeah, I mean, you know,
have you seen it, Kev?
Yes, I have, bits and pieces, and I know that they did come up with a sequel in 2008, The Miser Brothers Christmas,
right?
That was animated. Let me just take one at a time. The live action remake, it just reeks to me, Christian, of our business where we know it's an idea and it's a moneymaker, and then they just go hire a bunch of writers for hire. Oh, this guy's a good writer. Yeah, he's great. Yeah, we like his spec material. And rather than people who are actually fans, writers who are actually fans of the product, or go and take the time to study the product, the old products, and honor it. I mean, it just from top to bottom. Yeah, I digress. But and then when you get to the stop action one that was done in 2008, the best way I can describe it, it's like they took some of the claymation figures from this 1974 special, and then they all died and came back as zombies. I mean, how 30 or 40 years later, they just have these blank stares on their face. They're like, mouths are moving, but the eyes, they're just, like I said, they're totally dead. I can't even believe 40 or 50 years later, this is what they
So it was basically the MTV Celebrity Deathmatch version of these characters.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, maybe even worse. Because at least the Celebrity Deathmatch, that was part of the kitsch.
Yeah, of course.
But how do you go from this to that? Again, the lack of passion, and, you know, when... there's been other examples of this, you know, really date myself, but the original Hawaii Five-0, when it was they were doing a sequel to that somewhere in the 90s. And they hired, I think it was Stephen J. Cannell, who I love because he's such a big name. They're like, we'll hire him, whatever. Well, he wasn't a fan of the series. He'd never seen the series. He literally rewrote the pilot with a character in there that had been killed off. Oh. Not even knowing. And the guy, the actor, went along with it, never told anyone. He was like, I want the free payday.
Right.
And, you know, until, like, you know, it was all filmed, and they didn't end up airing it anyway. But yeah, you'd be really, really surprised. And tell us about the soundtrack.
Yeah, for sure. The original, I mean, this soundtrack had so many incredible songs. Six of them were original, all produced by Mari Laws. Some of my favorites are Here Comes Santa Claus. That was written by Gene Autry. Blue Christmas, written by Jay Johnson and Billy Hayes, and sung, of course, by the Blue Christmas Girl, who is played by Christine Winter. I mean, also an Elvis classic, but I don't want to digress down that road, Kev. My personal favorite, it's going to snow right here in Dixie, featuring the Wee Winter Singers and Ron Marshall.
That's one of your favorites?
I love it.
All right, all right. We'll get into that. All right.
And, of course, the quintessential, oh my gosh, Mickey Rooney with Ron Marshall singing I Believe in Santa Claus brings a tear, I think, to everyone's eye.
Yeah, right?
Amazing. And then, Kev, you already hinted at it, the Snow Miser and the Heat Miser songs, Bass and Law's team, classic. The Heat Miser song featuring George Irving, of course. And Shirley Booth closes it out with the opening closing credits title track.
I mean, I just, you know, talking about Shirley Booth, this was, and you brought this to my attention, and I didn't know this, that she was an Academy Award winning actress.
Yep.
But also she won an Emmy and a Tony. What are they, is that EGOT, Christian, or no?
Yeah, she got the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
She missed out on Grammy, but obviously, you know, with the singing, I'm just so impressed by this woman's ability. And, you know, and I also love, and I know we've always been a shallow, unfortunate culture, but I love when I see someone like that who, you know, appearance-wise doesn't check every box, but yet, you know, is outstanding. And this being her last performance, you know, that she turns in and totally iconic. And
I mean, when you cast that voice, you're getting a very specific performance, you know, in a lot of ways. It's like Carol Channing. You weren't going to get anything different, but that's why she's there.
Yeah.
And I think the choice of her as Mrs. Claus is, it's probably not what they would think of right away. Usually she was a character in the background. So I think that it's, you know, because I really only thought of her as Hazel, and then there was this, you know.
Right.
So it's always interesting when you find out how much more someone did.
You know, right. You know, so I give Rankin and Brass so much credit because, and I know it started with Rudolph back in the 60s where, you know, the sponsors, General Electric, said, we need a star. So they went and got Burl Ives. But then this became the thing where it was Fred Astaire, Mickey Rooney, Shirley Booth. But what I like is that it wasn't the stars of the day. You know, these were legends that, and it wasn't like they were top dollar legends. You know, it wasn't like today where to get Clint Eastwood or Stallone, it'd be amazing. Like back then, these people were not working, you know, were not working regularly where it would be really, you'd have to pay them obviously more than say a no-name actor. But I think I just give them a lot of credit for pulling them in. It started with the Rudolph thing, but think about how it worked, how well it worked. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and how they were able, sorry, Kev.
Good.
How they were able to tie like the actor's personality and look and feel into the claymation or the stop motion amazing character, I think was amazing. You know, like that Santa was Mickey Rooney.
Yeah, he really, I mean, I think he just owned it. I mean, you know, and we'll talk about it as it goes on. I thought he and, but yeah, we'll go over all the other leads. It seems like Mickey Rooney and Shirley Booth just steal a show. But at the same time, the Heat Miser and the Snow Miser are incredible. You know, the kid who plays Iggy is incredible. I mean, so yeah, you have a lot of standouts on this.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Christian.
I think the you know, you referenced the Heat Miser, Snow Miser songs. They're like the old time showstoppers. It's very much like in Jesus Christ Superstar when King Herod comes out and he has the song and it's this huge production. Of course, it's appropriate for children, but you're just like, what is this? You know, I mean, when you're watching it with like a discerning eye now, you're like, oh yeah, this was fun. You can tell. I mean, you don't see this in all children's programming.
You
can see the detail. You can go like, I think they had a lot of fun filling in all those details, you know?
I think you bring up a good point, though. You know, again, they probably had such a respect for old Hollywood, which is why they cast all these old people. But then you're right in terms of musicals were dead by then. I mean, you know, in the 70s that you did, you got Grease and you got a couple of musicals. But we were kind of migrating away from musicals at that time. And the fact that they were like, nope, we're going to make basically, like you said, this is, you know, I always felt that this was a Broadway play. I remember years ago saying, telling, you know, my wife, like, you should get the rights to this and put this on Broadway because it's made for Broadway. But now that you just mentioned all that and you connect all the dots and you think about the fact that Mickey Rooney was from vaudeville in the silent days, I'm sure Shirley Booth was too. And I think these guys probably had the respect for the old, like I said, the old musicals. So I never even thought of that. You can see it all through.
Yeah, and that's funny, Kev, because I think if they presented it to kids as a musical, we would have all bucked that. You know, we would have been like, I don't want to watch a musical, but they put it in the stop motion. We were all in every year.
Yeah. And I don't know if they even thought it through on the fact that they probably loved it in their hearts, unless they were thinking of what we had talked about in Rudolph, grandparent and grandchild watching. So you knew right. You were going to get the kids because we talked about it. We didn't have cartoons back then on a weeknight. And, you know, you waited all year for these specials. And then, of course, you know, grandma and grandpa are going to love the music. I think everyone kind of knows Mickey Rooney. My God, like 300 films, and he'd been around forever. Yeah, it was interesting to know that he did not die with a lot of money. I know in the notes here it says he had $20,000. You know, I spent, I think it was his last Thanksgiving. We had Thanksgiving dinner with him at the house here.
Amazing.
And I did not mention one word about this special.
Oh.
Or the other one. Not. I know. I don't understand what's wrong with me. But you know, my wife did. And he was like, they were a lot of fun to do. And Maria's like, you want to watch him? He's like, no. He wanted to watch football. So we watched football instead.
That's awesome.
I mean, the interesting thing to think about is you listen to him in this, and, you know, he'd been around for so long, and he doesn't sound particularly young, but he lived 40 more years after this special, you know?
Wow.
You're right. Yeah.
That's really humbling. Okay, Rhonda Mann plays Mother Nature. I know that. And I didn't even remember this, but she was from the Howdy Doody show, right? I mean, probably original 1950s Howdy Doody. You wouldn't have known her, Christian, would you have?
No, Howdy Doody is more something that I know through reputation. You know, my dad watched it, but it wasn't even, I don't know. They must not have really preserved those in any way. I don't even think I've ever seen reruns other than like short clips.
You know what? In the 70s, there was like, it was on the tail end, I think, had a heartbeat and maybe some revivalist stuff. So I actually kind of remember in the 70s seeing it. And then remember, they had those ventriloquist dolls. I don't know if you remember. They were big Christmas sure. items. And they had, there was obviously a Howdy Doody, which kind of gave it a little...
Mortimer popular. Snurd.
Yes, Mortimer and then Lester. And yeah, the whole gang. I know we'll go down that path at some other point. Okay, let's talk about the Heat Miser and the Snow Miser. Again, the big stars being Shirley Booth and Mickey Rooney, but then under them, you've got George Irving playing the Heat Miser, super well-known on Broadway, and then many, many commercials of the 1970s. I remember White Owl, Cigars, he was a hawking, and then Dick Shaw, of course, was, you know, known starring in The Producers. And the reason maybe people don't hear much from him is because he died in 87.
Well, and Kev, one of the things you might have forgot, which I'm surprised because of your love for, George Irving was the narrator of The Underdog Show.
Oh, my God. You know, I never even knew that. I never even knew that. And you know what's funny with George Irving? You know, his headshot at the end of his life was the Heat Miser. And I knew that because when I was in New York at one point, and I saw a Heat Miser, and it said to whoever loved George Irving, whatever. He was so, he lived, like, he's one of the few that lived long enough to see this become the iconic thing it is. He died in 2016. He was 94 years old.
Yeah.
And the one thing I will say about the stop motion animation, whatever sequel they made in 2008, is they did bring him back and he sounds terrific in it, you know, and I thought that was probably cool. So.
Yeah, I liked that they brought back him and Mickey Rooney in that, but that might have been them just trying to bring back the two big names to...
Yeah, well, again, they wouldn't, especially at that point, wouldn't have cost much. So at least I think at least they did that much. Christian, you must have a lot to say about Dick Shaw.
Well, you know, it is one of those things that you know the voice, you know, and so this is a great presentation for, you know...
But you remember somebody. The producers, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the film version, of course.
Yeah, he played Hitler in Springtime for Hitler. Yeah.
which is more timely than ever, so.
Yes. Right.
But, yeah, no, exactly. And I think that, and it's funny, of course, because, like, you know, he's one of those guys that you, like, look up and you're like, oh, my gosh, he was so handsome at some point. But You know, because you made the point though, I'm going to admit that I cheated because I was trying to remember what it was from his filmography that, I got excited about when I looked it up, you know, earlier in the week. He was in the Michael Jackson short, Captain EO. So, that people would see at Disneyland. So, you know, that's not his official last work, but, to go from, you know, starting in the '50s, being in Mad Mad World, and then you end up in Captain EO. I mean, it's a long ride, show business sometimes.
Yeah. But you know what though? Look at, he still plays today because of that, right? Like that keeps him in the game. And we'll get into their performances as it goes on. I know the elves Jingle and Jangle were played by Bob McFadden and Bradley Bloke. McFadden did Thundercats, and he was Frankenberry for you serial fans of the 1970s. With Bloke, I know he also played Chumley on Tennessee Tuxedo. I know McFadden died in 2000, and Bloke just died in 2019. So another one who at least lived long enough to see, you know, or, you know, hopefully enjoy how popular this got, and hopefully wasn't bitter like some of the other best stars we know who didn't get paid. Ron Marshall, who plays the mayor of Southtown and Mr. Thistlewaite, he will get into Rankin and Bass doing the Easter Bunnies Coming to Town, hopefully one of these days. And I know I remember his voice in that. And maybe, did he even play? Well, I shouldn't ask a question I don't know the answer to, but.
Is it a Bob McFadden question?
No, it's a Ron Marshall question. I'm wondering, did he play the mayor as well in Easter Bunnies Coming to Town? Something tells me it was a mayor as well, but maybe I'm wrong. Because I like that about Rankin and Bass. Sometimes they had through lines in there. You know, before it was all kitschy and cool to have through lines in these stories. You know, when we grew up, Kelsey, and I've had poor Kelsey muted up till now. When we grew up, it wasn't like today where all of these stories are so threaded together and there's Easter eggs dropped in episodes and there's callbacks. I mean, you guys in like the Marvel Universe, and it's all done. Back then, it's like, no, I'm sorry, you're not getting rescued from Gilligan's Island. We don't give a shit. It's canceled. You know what I mean? Like there was no.
So sad. No one,
yeah, and that's why I give them a lot of credit with Rudolph, the fact that they reshot that ending, because normally they didn't care, you know. But and a lot of the Rankin-Bass stuff there's not necessarily carryovers between the episodes, but there are some things that they do thread through, which I think is nice. Not many things, but again, that's very much advanced for them to do.
One cool thread that I thought that is pertinent to this show, Kev, is Jessica, Mrs. Claus in Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, has red hair. And then in this show, there's that little hint of the red highlights in her otherwise snowy hair. Yeah. And I thought that's cool how they tied that back together.
Yeah, I was like, I'm hoping that was why. I thought that was a really great observation, too. I will say this before we get into the scene by scene. So, you know, Rick Goldsmith, who we've mentioned before, he fashions himself as the leading Rankin and Bass biographer. And he really is that. I don't think it's self-proclaimed at this point. I would say no one knows more. He got to know both Rankin and Bass throughout their lives. He was the one that went to them and said, you know, you need someone to preserve this. You need books. And they were like, really? They were confused, but he led the charge. He wrote a couple of chapters on spec, sent them to them. And they said, you know what? Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. And he's the one that's gotten all the merchandise and all that stuff is, you know, comes from him. His newest kind of thing is that they don't do enough to preserve these, like the way they'll do 4K updates of, you know, even the old Star Treks, and like, you know, or Disney will update their library, technically speaking. And he's like, none of this has been done with this library yet. It's every bit as important. It's every bit as popular. So it's kind of interesting. But the one thing he did say was that even though Rudolph and Frosty are the most popular of the series and the most iconic in terms of known worldwide, he said the Miser Brothers from tonight's episode we're going to cover are the ones that people ask about the most at the trade shows when he sets up all his gear. And he said people from all over the world. So just kind of cool and says a lot about this. I think for this special, I would say it might not be as overall popular as Rudolph and Frosty, but at the same time, I would say biggest cult splash to me. I mean, you know, and as far as I always liked Santa Claus Coming to Town as my favorite, but now I realize it was because my wife didn't love this one as much.
Uh-huh.
she liked it a lot, and we watch it every year. But and so I, after seeing it tonight, I don't know. This might be my favorite. Christian, I want to hear your thoughts, and I'll go to Ann.
Well, my thinking is that I don't remember this being on every year. It was like it was on sometimes, and I definitely saw it a few times. I hadn't seen it in a very long time before this week. And, you know, whereas to this day, Frosty and Rudolph are still on network TV, you know,
you're right.
And you can find these other ones on cable. And, you know, when I grew up, we had cable, but these weren't presented to you in the same way. So I think it's a little bit more of, you know, like a forgotten classic in some ways, because even, you know, I mean, I was born in 76, so this should have been on throughout my childhood, but I think that they definitely steered away from it a little bit, and it was nice to revisit with it. There's some great songs in it, you know. I think the one that I want to comment is Mrs. Claus' song with Shirley Booth as I Could Be Santa Claus. And I was just thinking, you know, in this day and age, I think the Santa fanboys would be up in arm at the idea that, you know, because if, you know, a woman becomes Doctor Who, a woman becomes the lead in Star Wars, you know, a woman is a starship captain, the idea. And, you know, I think that they would then be relieved, like, oh, good, she's not really going to do it. They're going to just send the elves down. But it's such a fun song, you know, and I kind of wish, I don't know, I wish she had something, you know, not she has plenty to do in this. But it makes you wish, like, I wish that they kind of had done that. And it was interesting. And what you said, I had no idea that they did actually try to tell that story. Obviously, they couldn't do it with Shirley because she'd passed away. But I think that it is more fun in that way. And, you know, you have the broad characters, you know, like the people they run into on the streets in South Town, you know, and it's got all the charm of it, but I can't quite put my finger on what's different about it. I mean, are the other ones timeless because they made them timeless? And to this day, you know, they're still on, and this, you have to seek it out. It's like, if it's in the DVD set from, you know, like 15 years ago, it's probably not the lead feature on a disc. It's probably like the second, you know, it's the second choice.
Any other overall thoughts you want to share?
I think that what I like about this one, because I hadn't seen it in a while, is you're just reminded of how fun all these are. You know, it's when you see Rudolph and you see Frosty enough, you kind of don't think about it. But like when I first saw it with my kids, you know, you realize like, oh yeah, this is actually kind of funny. And, you know, but so I was actually thinking, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll watch this with them. But then I had to watch it in the afternoon. And there's so much dealing with whether or not you believe in Santa. And I'm like, oh, my oldest is 7. My youngest is 5. I'm like, I don't even want to put that in their heads right now. So to me, that's a reason. That's the one reason why I'm like, I don't think I want to watch this with my kids right now. I think if they started to like lapse,
you, well,
of course, Santa Claus is real. Let's watch this, this historical document of Santa proving that he's real, you know?
Wow, I never considered that, but you're right. Why plant the seed? It does plant the seed of doubt. And I saw this in 74 at a time where I was at that age to question. So yeah. We were all questioning it. So it was like, oh, it totally gave an extended, I don't know, 2 or 3 years of believing, you know, based on seeing it.
Yeah, yeah. But there's that moment in The Great Pumpkin where they talk about believing in The Great Pumpkin is like, is that any different than believing in Santa Claus? And every year I'm always like, how's that going to fall on their ears? You know, are they going to be like, wait, is Santa like The Great Pumpkin? Does he not really come? And like, of course he comes. Look at all the stuff you get from him, you know?
Great Pumpkin works in mysterious ways. Kelsey, right. I do want to hear from you before, you know, because I wanted get a fresh perspective on this. Was this the first time you've seen it, Kel?
Yeah, this is the first time I saw it like all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but never watched all the way through, and I loved it. I'm not going to lie, though. It will probably break your heart for me to say this. I couldn't take the songs minus the minus the two I know from like the Heat Miser and Snow Miser, which are fun to me. All the other ones, I was like, please stop singing.
So Kelsey's trying to tell you that this is the Godfather 3 compared to Rudolph being the first Godfather.
But it's funny because like usually
no, I'm because not remember she didn't like she didn't see. I mean, she didn't like Rudolph either. Christian.
I mean, Santa is a jerk in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what's so funny? I'll digress, but this season of White Lotus, there's a Gen Z and Boomer debate about Godfather. Did you see, Kelsey?
I haven't gotten there. I just started.
All right, Christian, have you seen anyone else?
I have not seen that yet.
No.
But it's interesting to hear, you know, the grandfather and the super Boomer grandfather and the post Gen X lost generation son are excited to go to Sicily, and they're going to see where The Godfather was shot, and like it's the greatest film ever produced. And the Gen Z son was like, actually, it's not. And he was like, it is a 20th century, and I'm paraphrasing now, but it's a 20th century male fantasy about, you know, using violence to get what you want, exploit women, treat them however you want, and then come home with your wife like nothing ever happened or something like that. He just buttoned it all up. And it was just so interesting because all we ever hear is that Godfather is, you know, it's the...
I don't know. For some of us, that sounds like the American dream.
Kelsey, it's so interesting because you come from a musical family. Your sister, you love singing. You love your musicals. I guess I got sucked in. I always thought these were timeless classics everyone would love.
Well, I will say, Kev, I think there's a difference between like watching it to like watch it and like watching it when you're all like cozy and it's Christmas time and you're with the family and there's nothing else to do. Like I was watching it because I had to watch it for this. So right. I feel like I was like, okay, singing, move on. Come on. Which is like such a negative mindset. But I feel like it would maybe be different if I was like at home, have my bowl of popcorn and my hot chocolate. Okay. Like I might have a different view.
All right. So we have to work on that because Maria, it's funny. Maria said the same thing. Oh, I'm surprised. Kelsey and Elaine did not care for Rudolph. And she said, Kevin, she's like, they're just overwhelmed with their jobs. He's like, they're not even paying attention. Like, she just knew, leave it to Maria. So I'm glad you qualified. All right. And without further ado, please tell me, did someone like this?
Oh, you know that this is one of my faves, Kev. I mean, I even admitted that I love when the mayor is singing the ridiculous song that it's going to snow, ho, ho, right here in Dixie. I think it's hysterical. Heat Miser, Snow Miser, those are classics, but like Christian said, it's just fun. Like it's lighthearted, it's fun, it's a little silly, but it also has a really sweet message. And you know, that they gave Santa a holiday and the kids like got together and gave him, you know, the gifts. And it was funny because I was able to watch this with my 12-year-old niece. I called her 11 on another show. 12-year-old niece, and she loved all the songs. She just thought that the animation with the big tears was a little bit creepy, but she thought it was fun. But
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, she was like, Anna, and what's up with the weird tears? And I'm like, I never noticed that the tears were weird. I guess they are, but I love it anyways. I love Mother Nature. I love the silliness of the... I've always been a Snow Miser girl more than the Heat Miser.
Oh, we'll get into that.
Yeah, I love it too.
I will get into that. But you know, it's funny. I swear the generation under Gen Z and millennials have they're more in line. I keep noticing they're more in line with the older people's views. It's kind of funny. Like I'm watching that. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, it's weird.
I don't know. As we do this, maybe we'll figure it out. Listen, whether you agree, disagree, or you can tell us why Kelsey's generation does not respond to this material as we do. And what's our text number?
Our text number is 351-251-2511. That text number again is 351-251-2511.
Okay, it opens up exterior of the North Pole. We see Mrs. Claus doing her laundry. And, you know, I know she's being very matronly in this, and I understand that, you know, it appears as though she is just the wife. But I what I thought was great is that she really did. She drove the story. She saved the day. And as it goes on, too, and we'll get into scene by scene, when Santa, he's able to rest because he knows she's gone to save Jingle and Jangle, because he knows she's a badass. A meddler, yes, but a badass as well. And I thought, I don't know. So anyway, even though we see her doing the laundry and we'll see her doing those kind of chores, there's far more to that character. When Santa Claus unhitched his sleigh and vowed to take a holiday, this was a long time ago, before we were born. Not quite Christmas, but just past Thanksgiving. Can't give an exact date, is what she said. Now, I did see a crazy fan online come up with this concept, is that I think it was during the mayor's little song and dance number, and
yep.
there's a shot of a Charlie Chaplin.
Yes. As a fan.
So the idea is that maybe this took place in the 20s.
Yes.
That
and
was
same
theory.
With the outfits that they had on, like the shorts with the stockings and all, like Iggy's outfit was definitely not.
How cool is that? Never picked that up. We see Santa getting out of bed, and you know, Christmas work has made him weary. Crick in my back, stuff in my nose, aches in my fingers and all 10 toes. What I loved about Mickey Rooney's performance was the stuffed up nose. Oh. How great was that?
So great. Right? I mean, so believable. And he's like, ugh. Like he just sounds so miserable. And you're just like, ugh.
In comes the doctor, and Mrs. Claus trying to keep him cheered up. In comes the doctor, and he is just amazing. He's so negative. He's
so negative.
So Stephen Lemieux.
Such a grump. Oh my God.
Sorry. Shout out to someone who works for us. That's very negative. But in he comes. Yeah, serves you right. Getting pneumonia, gallivanting around the world in your open sleigh. And for what? Just to deliver presents to a bunch of folks who don't give a hoot in the first place. Giving Santa the medicine, and you just great animation with Santa's tongue sticking out, and you know, and he's just gulping awful medicine as he's hearing how no one cares about him or Christmas.
It would have been fun to have the doc come back in another scene because he was so brilliantly grumpy.
Yeah, you're right. And have him see the other side of things. Give it up as a bad job and stay home in bed. No one cares about Christmas anymore. And he insinuates people probably don't believe in Santa either. Mrs. Claus defends him, but Santa actually agrees with the doctor. He deserves a holiday, and then I'll be canceling Christmas. And I remember as a kid being so deflated when he canceled Christmas. I was like, oh, no, wait, they can do that? And, of course, you needed a nice Catholic mother like mine who'd be like, yeah, just like that. Anytime they want it, they can cancel it, and especially when you act up.
If you don't behave, it will be canceled. Kev, yeah. We had such similar upbringings.
Oh, well, the Catholic. It's just the Catholic way of up. It's the Catholic, the classic, I'd say probably 50s to early 80s Catholic upbringing was just perfection. Just
toe the line.
Yeah, how to perfect. I'll never forget even watching Thanksgiving night when I would watch Wizard of Oz. And as a little kid, I had such a crush on Dorothy. And I said, oh, my God, Mom, she's so pretty. And she says, yeah, she's dead. She was a drug addict.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh. She died.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Great. Anyway, as he cancels Christmas, what I love in filmmaking, in comes the slow music of the theme that we open this show with, and it comes in nice and slow, just instrumental, and then you hear, you know, Shirley Booth go into it. Did you ever hear That Terrible Year? And then the theme, and then There'll Be a Year Without a Santa Claus. And kind of interesting, at the end they go back to the theme song, but they say there'll be no year without a Santa Claus, which I thought was, I didn't even pick that up back in the day. We're packing up our shelves and our Noah's Arks. By the way, Kelsey, I guess that was a Noah's Ark toy would be big. I think I remember in the early 70s seeing them, Anne, right? Yep. With some plastic animals that would come in a jar, and right? You'd have a... Do you know what a Noah's Ark is, Kelsey?
I know what Noah's Ark is, but you guys had them as toys? I don't understand. If we were lucky.
Yeah, you might have a big... it would be a big ship. And then there would be little plastic animals, right?
Yeah, with the little ramp. And then you watch the end. There was two of each.
That's kind of nice.
And then a few years later, they came up with the stuffed version of the Noah's Ark, which, you know, was really special. You were super lucky if you had that one. I never did. I had the plastic.
Yeah, I don't think I had either. I just got it in story form at CCD. Another shout out to that was Catholic school. By the way, Kelsey, in your childhood, were your parents past making you go to any kind of religious school outside of public school?
No. My grandma was super like super religious, and she always went to church. So when we were with her, she wanted us to go, but she also never forced us. I would go sometimes with her. And our family growing up, like, we went to Mass on Christmas Eve, and that was about it. And we would just pop around with our different friends and their different, like, places, and it was kind of fun for us. But no, we never – both my parents grew up Catholic, and we're like, heaven. Y'all don't have to do that. And I was like,
sounds
okay, cool.
Lovely.
Yeah.
You know, but Christmas – the Christmas Mass, the Christmas Eve Mass was fun because you were at least thinking of Santa coming. Yeah. So it was one of the few times my ADD could kick in and I could.
And we all sang and it was cute.
Yeah.
It was fun.
To this day, Anne, I'm going to make a confession. To this day, I've never listened to one Catholic priest sermon. Like I hear it, the words would come through, but I never processed or moved or were understood or nothing, not a one. Sadly.
I think you need to do five Our Fathers and five Hail Marys after the show, and then that'll be fine.
By the way, so that's yes. So Kelsey, just so you know, that's you go to confession and they tell you what prayers to do, and you know, but whatever moves the needle. I did it. I always do it. You know, of course, because you're going to hell if you didn't.
Right. Exactly.
Why do I digress? Let's get back.
That was a big tangent.
Let's get back to the pagan, the pagan part of Christmas that we love the best.
Let's get out of therapy and get back to the show.
So Jingle and Jangle, our little elves get the call from Mr. Claus that there's not going to be a Christmas. So in the mirror, we cut to, as Christian had talked about earlier, Mrs. Claus, anyone singing Anyone Can Be Santa, a sweet little song. I just wrote, how amazing is Shirley Booth? I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Kelsey, you didn't see it or hear it. I thought her talent is
Kev,
incredible.
You're getting me wrong here, though. I didn't love the singing, but I liked the movie. Like, this was my favorite one we've watched yet. So I didn't hate the whole thing. I just fast forwarded through some of the songs.
Did you listen on two times speed?
No, but that is something Elaine would do. I'd never do that. It gives me a headache. But Elaine did that.
Elaine, I love it. This is where she hatches the plan. All you have to do is go out and find some Christmas spirit from last year, she tells Jingle and Jangle. And again, what I love is that she's driving the story. You know, like, she's his champion. He's broken. He's beaten down. And I really feel like they're equals in this. I do. I feel like she's greater than him. You know, he's definitely down and out for the count. And I think it's Mrs. Claus who.
Which was pretty progressive for this time, you know, for this era. Yeah.
I think so. Here's an interesting era I found. Little Vixen the Reindeer will take Jingle and Jangle down to Earth, somewhere in Southtown. I guess they're up in the North Pole. But she said, he has made the trip before. Now, it's interesting because Santa refers to Vixen as a girl.
Right.
She's just a baby. I've got to get her home. And from then on, it's a girl. So it's kind of interesting.
I never caught that.
Back to Santa, still being cranky. What's all that racket? And then we see him settling into his bed. He's kind of happy. And he's like, what are you up to, Ma? Whenever you look like you're not up to anything, you're up to something. She admits what's going on because she doesn't want to lie to him. Santa hears the plan. He's horrified that Jingle and Jangle are down there in that cruel world alone. And then, you know, she's like, they're not alone. Vixen's with them. And then Vixen, she's just a baby. This was nice. Such a great contrast to me to the 64 Rudolph Santa, who was just cranky and just elitist. And just, I mean, I, you know, again, I do love Rudolph and I get his arc and all that, but I remember just being so hurt by that Santa. I'm like, wait, that's not the Santa I was told about when he rejects Rudolph as a baby and he rejects his nose and you should be ashamed. And I mean, the whole thing, this to me was redemptive because the fact that he's so worried about Jingle and Jangle and little Vixen, and he's like, screw this, I'm getting out of bed to save them. I'm like, okay, that's the Santa
that
I knew, you know, that's the Santa we all knew. And I don't know, it never seems like it came up with Rankin and Bass in interviews. We'd have to probably interview Rick Goldschmidt about this, but I wonder if they didn't get notes and feedback from the Rudolph special 10 years before.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, probably.
About that Santa and them. You know, I mean, they've already done Santa Claus. By the way,
They've already done Santa Claus Coming to Town 4 years before in 1970, where you get to see a really sweet, happy-go-lucky Santa who's younger. You know, you see him as Kris Kringle. That'll be another one we'll cover at some point.
You know, I love that part too, Kev, just to piggyback on that just a little bit. Like, he actually is in tune with his wife. Like, he's like, what are you up to? You know, right. And like the ones before, like, so not connected. And then, yeah, to see that sweet side, you're like, that's what Santa's supposed to be.
Yeah. And he's heroic. Just, and he's like, I'm going to go save him. He's, yeah, I have to go. He's like, those three won't get past the Miser brothers. And
yeah, I love him.
He teases the Miser brothers here. If, you know, if the snow miser doesn't freeze them, the heat miser will cook them for sure, or something like that. Calls Dasher. And it's interesting to see Santa in the layman's outfit. I think Santa cleaned up really nice. Did you see
his what
nice
an ensemble.
Suit, right? Kelsey, did you remember his suit was pretty nice?
Pretty nice. He looks good. Not too shabby for Santa.
Yeah, I could do the vest and the little jacket and the bowler hat.
He looks great.
The tails.
And it's interesting. So we cut to Jingle and Jangle and Vixen flying through the heat miser's territory. And you see they get heat beam shot at them and they fall. For anyone who thinks the snow miser is any better of a, I wouldn't say human being because I don't know what I'm calling them, better as an individual, let's say, than heat miser, this is proof he really isn't. Because he's laughing as the heat miser is scorching Jingle and Jangle.
That's a good point, Kev, because I forgot about that. And I'm thinking, when I finished, I was thinking that. And so I'm glad you just brought that up.
As a kid, I was like so charmed by the snow miser. I still am, by the way.
Me too.
So charmed, but that's what he was. He was a sociopath charmer. And the other one, at least, he was more honest. Like,
owned what he was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's just more honest.
He owned it.
Thank goodness Little Vixen saves them. And they land in Southtown, where the policeman sees them and they give them a ticket for all sorts of laws they've broken. They put socks on Vixen's head, so Vixen looks like a dog. But you can see Vixen's eyes getting weak, which I thought was just really good animation. The lady from the town has her stole, but it's her cat. So
that was weird.
Yeah.
But Kev, do you remember girls having those stole things? Like, I had one of those to wear to church that was rabbit, and you put your hands in the middle of it. Exactly like that. Mine was
pure white. Photos. Yeah, I remember seeing photos of it. Kelsey, would you have any memory of the stole?
Oh, yeah. I never had one, but I remember them. I knew exactly what it was. So I was like, that was kind of creepy and clever that they made it the cat.
The cat chases Vixen away and off everyone goes, and it's a big giant mess. Santa comes in to town, talks to the policeman. Policeman's like, yeah, wait till the judge gets done with him. He'll give him what for or whatever. He's like, you know, and Santa's like, not much Christmas spirit there. Santa Claus, poor little guys, must be scared to death. He's really still worried about them, which I love seeing. But then up in the tree, you've got Jingle and Jangle and Vixen hiding. But this is where they get the idea of, let's talk to the children. They've always been Santa's favorites. Jangle has the idea. If we want to look for some Christmas spirit, the kids will have it. But we got to hurry because Vixen has a slight fever. So they put Vixen aside. And this is where we meet Ignatius Thistlethwaite from the original character from the original short story, Year Without a Santa Claus. And Iggy, yeah, kind of very negative. He's a lot like the doctor. I don't care if Santa Claus comes. It's none of our business. Besides, believing in him is for little kids. Again, I remember just a kid being like, oh, yeah, I was horrified. And do you remember seeing this as a kid? Like,
oh, my God. Even now, when you just said that, like, a chill went through my entire soul. Because I'm like, oh, my gosh. When Iggy said all that, yeah, I was in shock. And I may have even shed a tear or two as a little kid. Because I'm like, there's no way Iggy can be right. And feeling like, dare I say, hatred towards Iggy when I was a real little kid, because he was the one who didn't believe. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't stand Iggy. Now that I'm older, I appreciate him a little bit.
Here's where you did need my mother. My mother would have come out, and just telling you right now, and she was like, oh yeah, oh, you don't believe in him? Well, good, because you're getting nothing.
I love that. Coal in the stockings all around.
Yeah. Oh, there! Yeah, my God, we all got the coal in the stocking stories. Kelsey, did your parents ever try to sell you on that?
No way. Have you met you haven't met my dad, but yes, my dad all the time to me, all the time. And I was like, yeah, okay, nice try. Mom's gonna get some stuff and Santa's gonna get some stuff. Whatever, Dad.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, your generation's just too smart. Yeah, we were so gullible. We were such lemmings. It'd be like, you're getting coal. And, you know, it happened to me as a kid. I'd be like, no, yep.
Bought it all.
Oh, yeah. Hook, line, and sinker.
No. I was like, that is not happening. Oh, please.
The dog catcher takes away Vixen. And then Santa arrives at Iggy's house as Klaus. Mom invites him in. By the way, like, it was just nice to see a sweet mom. Come on in. Let me get you something for that cold. Dad's there, too.
And I, you know, again, what I thought was funny too, Kim, really quickly, when how he's like, this is my friend. Just this old man is my friend. And they're like, oh, come on inside.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Well, it was the South, number one, more hospitality. And then number two, you know, remember, it was a different time. Not everyone was a child molester like today.
That's true. That's true. You know, I was like, this is kind of nice.
Yeah, it was a definitely a different time. Again, I'm going to shout out Mickey Rooney's acting. Just the stuffy nose and the slurping of the cocoa or the hottie toddy he's probably having. And you know what a hottie toddy is, right?
Are you kidding? I had an Irish grandmother.
Yeah,
I know what a hottie toddy is.
Really?
My mom made them Irish and Italian. We got our hottie toddies.
All right. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's still no better way to cure a cold.
It's so true, though.
Not Santa pumps Iggy and goads him. Tell me about Santa. Do you believe no one believes in Santa anymore. And then, you know, you hear Mickey Rooney to himself, just as I suspected. And then in comes the I Believe in Santa Claus, which I think is such a beautiful song and such a beautiful number and so very touching and got me a little emo. I'm not going to lie. And help me out here.
Oh, are you kidding? I get verklempt every time he sings that, you know. It's just like, yeah, he hits all the emotions on that one. When he says that, wipe your question from your mind. Yes he does exist, just like love.
Yes,
you know, he's there waiting to be missed. I mean, Kels, girl, please give it a re-listen. It should have been a hit. It was beautiful.
And Ian, to your point, because I wrote lyrics are amazing. So you're too old for Santa Claus, he said with a smile. Then you're too old for all the things that make a life worthwhile. Oh. So what is happiness but dreams? And do they all come true? Look at me and tell me, son, what is real to you? Come on, Kelsey.
Come on, Kelsey.
Just believe in Santa Claus like you believe in love. Just believe in Santa Claus and everything he does. Wipe that, like she's, and I love the way Mickey Rooney sings this too. Wipe that question from your mind. Yes, he does exist. Just like love, you know he's there. Waiting to be missed. Drop the candy cane.
See, you guys reading the lyrics, I like the song.
You know what? We need to bring that song up so we can play it for later. Please. You're too old for Santa Claus. I know it's on the soundtrack somewhere. Well, Iggy, of course, is turned. And Iggy relays the information that Jingle and Jangle, he does know Jingle and Jangle, and they were chasing the dog catcher, and Santa immediately connects the dogs. Good grief, Vixen. We cut to Vixen sick and in tears at the pond. That's so sad. Me being the dog rescue guy, I still get so sick. Poor little Vixen in there. Santa Claus didn't show off, but he was in a rush. So he flies out with Blitzen. No, excuse me, not Blitzen. Blitzen comes later. He flies out with Dasher.
Dasher, right? Yep.
Dasher, yeah. Iggy and the family realize that this probably could be Santa Claus, the Santa Claus and a reindeer, and that he's talking about what the Jingle and Jangle actually really elves. And this is where Dad advises, and when Iggy now feels bad about everything, he's like, well, go to the mayor. And Jingle and Jangle have the same idea. And now we go to the mayor, and of course, who's laughing at them? You don't have a snowball's chance of this being real. And then they go on to explain that it hasn't snowed for 100 years in Southtown. And then this is when the mayor makes his deal, saying, hey, you make it snow, and I'll believe you, and we'll give Santa a national holiday. Jangle agrees. And then we go into our song that you like so much, and I didn't really care for. I would always get a little bored of this song. Kelsey, I did not care for this song. Okay,
good. Thank you.
I don't know why I like it so much, because it's not really my genre, but there's something about it that I just think is fun and silly. And
it just doesn't feel very Christmas-like, and I also don't care about him. You could just tell he was a corrupt politician. just
which
doing
is I think why I like it.
Yeah. But you know what? You know what Rankin and Bass get a lot of credit for is how they redeem the people and in their stories. And obviously there are some stories where the character doesn't get redeemed at all. But for the most part, you know, whether it's the mayor who doesn't believe or Iggy or, you know, you see everyone kind of comes around. And I love that they leave room for that. You know, it's, by the way, the Heat and the Snow Miser, same thing. You know, it's a really good arc that they put in most of their things. Okay, so Santa Claus is at the pound. He pays the fine. We learn that Vixen's sick due to warm weather, and Dogcatcher feels bad because he's like, I didn't know it was a reindeer. Santa puts Vixen on his shoulders, then puts her on Dasher, and has to get her home really fast to the North Pole to keep her alive. Jangle thinks to call Mrs. Claus. He's like, okay, she'll know what to do. And they're on Iggy's roof, and then Mrs. Claus arrives with Blitzen. And that's when she says, we are gonna go see the Snow Miser. Okay, so can we bring in a little Snow Miser, kids? It's like, am I asking too much here to bring in a little bit? Because to me, now I will say as a kid, he was my guy. Now, I don't want to give away too much information, but there were family members who thought I was a lot like the Snow Miser.
Kev, I have to ask, did you do the little song and dance with a hat in your family room or your parlor back in the day?
No, you and your brothers? Not. I did not, Ann, but I will say this. And are we bringing the music in, kids? Feel free to go for it. But I was going to say, what I sent you some links, Ann. What blew me away was how many fan dance numbers created around the Snow Miser song.
Amazing.
And, you know, I was super, like, I can't believe it. If you ever want to go online and just type in Snow Miser dance routines, I'm so blown away. Okay, here he comes. And by the way, a little watch along here. Now, I want to say this about Snow Miser. Much more prolific as a dancer, and he's much more the performer because he's got the hat and cane.
Well, on his legs, like, he's built more like a dancer than the Heat Miser.
You're right. He's definitely built more like a dancer. But if you look at the difference with them, which I never really noticed, the Heat Miser doesn't really do much. This is the first of his chilling spins on the snowball. And can we have a shout out to the little henchmen? Kelsey, come on, give it up. Look at
I'm obsessed with them. I actually screenshotted, and I want to be a henchman of, I can't decide which one yet, but right, for Halloween right. Next year.
You want to be? Oh, what a good idea.
Thank you.
I like it. Ah, oh, the best when he turns the snow.
There we go, the spin again.
The spin. And
bring me my henchmen. Look at them with their hats.
They're so cute.
That's right.
I like the icicles on his nose, too.
He's so charming.
Whatever I touch.
And by the way, he's just having so much fun. He loves being the Snow Miser.
Oh, yeah. He's nuts.
Too much.
I love him.
He comes in, and I also love, by the way, Mrs. Claus, before he comes out, she's like, here he comes, the big ham. But I love in writing that they gave him that. They gave him that he was a ham and he was a showman and, you know, he did the song and dance and all that stuff. And I love that they gave him that, whereas, you know, you'll see when we go over Heat Miser. By the way, guys, cue up the Heat Miser for when we get there. He sits on his throne. He's so charming. How's your hubby? Couple of little cracks, and Iggy gets very defensive. Hey, don't you dare make fun of Santa Claus. And Snow Miser, of course, he sucked in Kelsey like he sucked me in as a kid. It was like, Bubby, I love him. You know, Snow Miser would have been a phenomenal producer.
Really good.
I love Santa Claus.
Really good.
Yeah, he's the best thing for Snowbiz. Snow Miser, he's right there. Whatever you need. But when they find out, I just need you to send some snow down to Southside. Wait, what? And you see his eyes all spin around because even he's so freaked out. No can do, Mrs. C. That's my brother, the Heat Miser's territory. Mrs. Claus was like, okay, no problem. I'll go speak to him. He's like, well, good luck with that one. You know, good luck with that hothead.
But then he's right back to being his jovial self. Don't be such a stranger. We'll have a blizzard. I mean, just he's just a real peach, isn't it? Well, excuse me. He's just a real snowball, ice cone, snow cone. Wouldn't you say, Kelsey?
Total snow cone. I love him, though.
Yeah, no, I do. By the way, why do you think that these people get what they get? They suck you right in.
They really do.
Yeah, I'm all the F in with the snow miser.
Especially the way he talks to Mrs. Claus. Like, he's just like, hey, what does he say? Like, honey. And yeah, sugar plum.
Oh, he's amazing.
I love it.
Such a charm.
A little chilly humor there. I love him.
All right, can we bring in the heat miser? Because you know what's funny, Ann? I was really surprised that a lot of people like the heat miser better. And I thought the snow miser would have been for sure the more popular of the two.
Well, interesting you say that, Kev, because as a kid, I was the only one who was team snow miser. All my friends liked heat misers. So I was like, what's wrong with me? Why do I like the snow miser
okay.
better? Everybody likes
now,
this guy.
Here's the brilliance of laws and best. Slower paced. And notice, no dancing from his guys. They're on pogo sticks.
That's the best.
And notice, he's not dancing because he's just miserable. He's giving you all he's got by just doing his little singing. And by the way, George Irving is a Broadway performer. But even look at him standing in his throne with a slight shuffle.
He's got a little bit of the white man overbite going there, Kev.
He does, yeah. Yeah,
His little henchmen have better outfits, I think. Like, I'm leaning towards being one of them.
No.
Like, they have sparkly outfits.
Kels, stay with Team Snow Miser.
Yeah.
Okay. Come on.
Okay. They have
There's passed. Already enough people on Team Heat Miser.
That's true.
And look at his face. Look at always the permanent scowl. So miserable. But again, this music is fantastic. But I love the difference between the songs, but you notice like the orchestration here and the pacing's much slower. Here they come, nice and slow. His guy,
no pogo sticks here though, Kev. They're nope. actually they're rocking it like the Rockettes.
Okay, he got excited for a second. Sing
there he
it.
Is.
And still just stepping in place.
That's
but even
all he's
George,
got. Look
but
at
even
his
George
body.
Irving, listen to him. Cool. He goes into a monster kind of voice.
Too much. Too much.
Okay, here we go.
Well, 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 if it isn't Mrs. Claus.
Let it play, you guys.
Your husband out doing another commercial for my brother.
Oh, come now. You know Santa isn't on your brother's payroll.
Well, then he's grossly unfair. That's what.
Yeah, because everyone. By the way, you know what's also great about Heat Miser? The amazing victim. And
such a victim.
And he's just been screwed over by everybody. And even when they ask him for a favor, he's like, I don't know why I should. Right. No one does anything for me. By the way, I know many a heat miser. I grew up with many a heat miser.
Forever surrounded by heat misers, Kev.
Oh my goodness. I think Stephen Lemieux may, instead of being the doctor, I think maybe Stephen Lemieux might be, he'd be a good, I think when he gets older, he'll be a better heat miser.
I agree with that, Kevin. I think that would be a nice heat miser.
Okay.
A little oxymoron there.
And so they ask for a favor, and he says, George Irving says, then what is it? When they ask for a favor, it's like, I don't see why I should. No one helps me. He pauses, and then he's like, well, what is it? And you can see, just again, to me, I think this is really good writing, is a little tease in his character that he is redemptive. He could have a moment of redemption. The fact that he's like saying, I could, you know, the fact that he says that gives us an idea, an inkling that he can come around. The fact that he's like, okay, what is the favor? You know, where I thought he would cut right off, but no.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of.
Wasn't a hard out. He's like, what is it?
So get him on. He goes, okay, if he'll let me have the North Pole, I'll let it snow in the South. But even as a kid, I thought it was like, wait. It is not a necessarily a fair trade. He wants the entire North Pole for one city.
Right.
South Town does not seem equitable.
I felt like that was not fair as well. Right. I was like, I could see why he's pissed.
Right.
And so they get him on the get him out on the hotline, you know. So it comes the hotline comes out, right, which is great. And then, right, I love just like Snow Miser, hey, Sugar Plum, how'd you make out with the hothead? I heard that. And then there's that whole joke of Mother always did like you best, which they, that's a Smothers Brothers bit, which is an old comedy duo from the 60s that bled it a little bit into the 70s. And I think wasn't that their whole shtick? Mother always, the one brother would say to the other one, Mother always did like you best.
I don't know. I didn't make that connection.
So, of course, they get nowhere, and now they're shooting ice and heat at one another. And then Mrs. Claus is like, okay, enough. And again, that's why I love her character. I'm going over your heads. And now the boys go into a panic. You wouldn't. Yes, I would. And I love George Irving, who plays Heat Miser's panic here. Look what you did now. It's just amazing. Jangle says Mrs. C is through fooling around. They're going to Mother Nature. And Mother Nature does not like to be disturbed. That's how much stick Mrs. Claus has.
Right, Kels, can I ask, is that still a thing, or was that a thing when you were a kid, if you don't mind me asking? Like, because that was huge, don't disturb Mother Nature, back in the 70s.
Oh, like that as a saying?
Yeah.
I mean, can I just intervene on behalf of Kelsey? Kelsey, relax. I've got this. And with gymnastics, with dance, with all the other many, many activities, Mother Nature could take a hike.
Okay.
Mother Nature better not get in Kelsey's way or her generation's way. Okay.
I digress.
Okay. Are we all clear? Are we all clear?
He's not wrong.
Clear.
So,
but I will say we did have to compost in Seattle for Mother Nature. So,
oh, there you go. That was the offerings to the god Mother Nature, because there was no religion either. So that was good. All right. We had something. So Mrs. Claus is great. So they gave you a hard time. And I like Mrs. Claus being polite, saying, well, I'm sure they didn't mean to. And I love Mother Nature's response. Oh, yes, they did. They're nasty boys, both of them. Yoo-hoo, children. And then they come. Yeah, what is it, Mother dear? Interesting, Snow Miser pats her arm. Like, you can tell he's the good kiss ass. While Heat Miser goes and pours a hot tea. And I didn't know if he was pouring mom a hot tea or a hot tea for himself.
But I think he went right mom.
But he was interesting. He went for the heat, but the other one did the patting in the arm. So I'd like to think in this world, the Snow Miser definitely is the bigger kiss ass to the Mother Nature, and probably is the favorite of the two of them.
Definitely.
Because he's a slight charmer. There's another gaffe here where, when Mother Nature gets them to, she makes an offer to them, says, you're going to let it snow and you're going to let it rain. She says it to the wrong characters. Did you notice that, Ann?
I didn't notice that. I always noticed that
as a kid, interestingly enough. Not that it matters. And they both stand their ground. I won't do it. Me neither. Stop it. And then comes the lightning bolt, and then broken right there. Yes, Mother dear. And then they're like, they won't be a problem anymore. And you see the two of them cursing each other behind her back.
So mad. So classic.
Of course, Mother Nature's great, because she was always giving me a warm feeling inside, because she's like, nope, we have to show this world in Santa an example of the Christmas spirit, which I thought was wonderful. Santa Claus gets Vixen home into bed, sees the note from Mrs. Claus, and he's, I love that. Ma will look after those two, and I can look after my cold. He's able to rest. And I will have to say, I'm married to a bit of a Mrs. Claus myself. So I know when she's handling the business, I know I can sleep off my cold. It's nice when you have a badass partner. So I always loved that as a kid, but I still love seeing it now. The mayor, Anne's character, Mayor Selton, on the phone with his wife. And don't forget to wear your galoshes. Kelsey, had you ever heard of galoshes?
No.
Okay. So, and we were at the tail end of galoshes. Had you heard of galoshes, Ann?
Sadly, because my dad, I think, still has galoshes. So,
no.
Oh, gosh, Kev, you just brought up some tough memories as a kid for me, because I had to wear them.
Those
little, they were called rubbers that you used to have to put over your shoes. I had to wear those way too light in life.
Yeah, they would. That's what we did. So with shoes, Kelsey, back before, like Amazon or before, you know, China was making everything for us and everything was so readily available. You know, you had your pair of shoes, and so you didn't want to wreck your shoes. So you would have this almost like a rubber gasket that would slide over your shoes, and that was your galoshes. And so you would wear those when it was raining and snowing.
So cute.
Not too much.
And is there even a world anymore where someone's sitting at their desk at a 9-to-5 job and a wife or a partner is going to call and say, you know, it's raining, make sure you wear your jacket and dinner is being made. Like, I don't know. Is there such a scenario? But by the way, Kelsey, that's how it used to be. It was never my family because both my parents were working. They were very progressive, but I knew we were the tail end, I think, Anne, of a generation that had a little bit of that, right? The at-home mom.
Yeah, my mom was home during the week, and she didn't have to call my dad to remind him about any foul weather gear because my dad pretty much could have opened his own foul weather gear store. But and still to this day, probably is more than L.L. Bean. But that was definitely, we were the tail end of that. And I wished we had missed it completely because I do still have scars.
Santa Claus sees the headlines. He gets his day off and he stands corrected. And boom, he passes out and goes to sleep. And this is when kids around the world hear the news. East, West, North, and South kids send gifts that they make for Santa, and the little ones write letters. Kelsey, was there anything politically incorrect about the multicultural appearance of all the kids, or would that be okay today?
It was okay to me.
Okay. All right. Good. No, I'm glad. Everything I know today is.
But I will say, again, Carolina, who's with us now, is more millennial with me versus, like, that would have been a great question for Elaine, Gen Z. I don't know what Gen Z would have said.
You know what? Let's do this. Let's have your sister Erica watch this, please, as an assignment. She's easily offended, which we like.
This is true. Right? This is
true. But also has a background in music, which we also like.
Yep.
So this will be very, very valuable information.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But I thought it was beautiful. I thought, I'm from a different time. Santa wakes. He goes, he sees an empty workshop, sees the reindeer sleeping, and you can see he's tired, he's a little out of sorts, but at the same time, he feels like something's off. And that's when the bird delivers the letter, "I'll have a blue Christmas without you." In comes this really, really sweet version. And to me, I thought, I actually like this version better than Elvis's of Blue Christmas. I thought this was really, maybe it's just because the visuals are so beautiful.
The giant bow.
Yeah, all of it. Just like, you know, and to see that Santa has a tear in his eye.
Yeah.
You know, that makes him emotional. Jingle and Jangle are emotional too on the side. And that's when, you know, and they come with presents for Santa and they tell him, look, the kids brought a holiday to you. And this, I used to always get the chills as a kid when Santa goes, a holiday? Nonsense! Like, but you're cricking your back, your spine. He's like, my back feels fine, never better. Harness up the sleigh. And I thought, yeah, it always gives me the chills every time Santa makes his big comeback.
Yeah, triumphant.
Right? And then you see the mayor creating a Santa Claus lane. So you see he's arced. He went from not believing and laughing to now making an actual Santa Claus lane in Southtown. And Shirley Booth wraps it up, like I said, singing the same song from the beginning, except instead of saying there'll be a year without a Santa Claus, there'll be no year without a Santa Claus.
The best.
Right? And then so that just gives us a little bit of a reiki down. Yeah, I enjoyed this even more than I have in the past. And I'd have to say it's between this and Santa Claus Coming to Town for me, as far as Rankin and Bass specials go. And now I'm going to definitely make my wife watch it again, because I think, Kelsey, she's been overwhelmed too watching these and not as appreciative. I think this needs to go up on a big screen and we need to to look at this.
It's the right setting, cozy. Mm-hmm.
Right. Blankets, cocoa.
And I do think that this does translate so well to a play, a Broadway play, a musical. I really do. I think it's just going to take someone who cares enough to do it. You'd be surprised. I mean, look at Cobra Kai.
it wasn't like a big think tank at, you know, at the studio trying to bring it back for years. It literally was like two or three writers who were fans of the series and just kept pushing it. And Dax Shepard was a big fan of Chips. He kept pushing, bringing it back. That one didn't work, but sometimes it just takes one lunatic. I mean, one artist who just says, I'll stop at nothing to see this done. Well, I will say this for the Christmas specials. We love podcast. Here's my one slight claim to fame in terms of something similar. I'm a believer that the 1951 Scrooge starring Alistair Sim is the greatest Scrooge ever produced. And I stand by it. It's the closest to Dickens. Alistair Sim is just timeless in it. I mean, I know there's actors from back in the day where you can tell they're using a different style of acting. But then every now and again, you get these other actors that it doesn't matter what era they're in.
Right.
You know, and he's one of them. And anyway, for years, that was not on the air. For years, years and years and years. It went on a 10-year period. And I thought maybe someone didn't have the rights. Maybe someone lost the rights, whatever. Well, I happen to have a friend, Chuck Saffler, a very dear friend who's actually from Boston. And Chuck, one of Chuck's jobs is he runs the Fox movie channel. And every year I would say to him, you know, Chuck, I'm telling you, like, they run A Christmas Story around the clock. I mean, you know, and I know it does great numbers. They wouldn't do it. And other channels just have the Yuletide. Why don't you grab this one movie that, you know, like no one has seen in 10 years, but yet is the best and run it 24 hours? I brought it up to him and he was like, oh, I'll think about it. And they must have forgotten. So then I brought it up to him again, just a few years back. I ended up getting a random call from him. He's like, what was the one again? You know, he was at the office with his people. And it turned out he's like, oh, no, it's available. He's like, yeah, no, I guess just no, people have just forgotten about it. And so he did it. And then he was shocked at the numbers. He's like, oh my God, we got a big spike Christmas Eve.
So cool.
From playing it. And so I think to this day, they still do it. So that was my like, but that's all it took is somebody who cares enough to say, hey, we can do this. I mean, so I think that with the, even Rankin and Bass, I know probably Warner Brothers or whatever has the rights to it, but it's just going to need the, it's going to need the right person who cares enough. Probably will be actually my wife, who she is the type that would get the ball over the goal line.
Would you want to see it in its original form or modernized?
I'd like to see it live action done correctly. Modernize, bring in great writers. I mean, yeah. Like it's like a lot of things today. You see the quality of writing on television, how high it is. And even with movies, I mean, like there was a magic back in the day because there was no formula for storytelling like there is today. People are telling stories from their heart. But today in a movie, it's a three-act structure and it's an inciting incident and it is a midpoint. And it's almost at a place now where you have no excuse to not write something, make something good today. There's just too many good writers, too much good acting, and there's too much information out there. So often, like I thought the musical version of Scrooge that was just done with, what was it called?
Spirited?
Spirited.
With Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell.
Right.
That was so good.
So good.
It was so good.
But you could tell like that was a collaboration of a lot of great artists came together. And then you have one amazing person running, steering the ship. When you bring them, when you actually care, which that's Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds. So, you know, they're not, they know. And Will Ferrell especially knows from Elf. He didn't even want to make Elf and even thought it was foolish when he was doing it. And I guess John Favreau continually reminds him, remember you thought this was going to be, and you know, Will Ferrell, honestly, if he just wanted to cash checks off of Elf, he can't. So he understands that, you know, the, what it takes to make a quality picture and how worth it is to make a quality Christmas movie because it's timeless, gets played over and over again. So anyway, with the Hallmark and the Lifetime movies, you know, they pump them out really fast. That's a numbers game. They know most people just want to watch that 24 hours a day for the 30 days of the holiday. Everyone's tuning in no matter what. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I don't agree with that philosophy, but I also understand they're limited on time. They're limited on money. I wouldn't want to see this done that way. But if this got in the right hands, like if this got with an Apatow or this got with a Will Ferrell, it would have to get with a you know, an Amy Schumer. It would have to get with Tina Fey. If it got in the right hands and the person was a fan, yeah, no, I would love to see it live action done right.
Yeah, and after seeing Will Ferrell's Spirited, I think you're right. Like, if he took it, that would be insane. It would be so amazing. His talent is just phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's at a listen, there's a lot of talented performers, but then there's certain actors you can tell by the choices they're making that they also have a great eye. Even if they're not the writers or the directors themselves, they have a really great eye for what is good. So, you know, anyway, yeah, so I would love to see it. I would love to see it. And by the way, just anything that kind of keeps this alive, you know, I'm glad that your 12-year-old niece Anne loves this.
Yeah, me too.
Because I want to see this continue as we go on. But yeah, I don't know. Any closing thoughts, people, on Year Without a Santa Claus?
Big Mrs. You know? Claus fan, big Mother Nature fan. I need to rewatch it. But I did like it. I did like it.
You know what? Kelsey, when I watch it with Queenie, I'm going to have you watch it in a nice relaxed environment. I will pop the popcorn.
Perfect.
Right? And you don't even need to, normally I would do my speech to open the performance. you know, every year what we do at the house here is we'll have It's a Wonderful Life screening, and it's always fun to bring in new people that have never seen it. So it's always our tradition to bring in people who've never seen it before and introduce them to the magic of that film. But yeah, all right. Anyway, I digress. You guys, it's the Christmas Special We Love podcast.
Our text number is 351-251-2511. That text number again is 351-251-2511.
And please, guys, go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating in your reviews. It helps. I think now we're starting to see our numbers climb because obviously we're getting closer to the holiday, but we would love to keep making these. There's hundreds and hundreds of specials, many, many great ones, many undiscovered ones, which would be fun. And then some ones that maybe aren't so good, but we'll cover them anyway. Needless to say, okay, for myself, for Anne and Kelsey, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Continue to enjoy the spirit as best you can. And yeah, remember that this, at least for this month, people, you know, you can give a little more, forgive a little more, be a little kinder, be a little more accepting, all those things. And I don't know, these specials maybe help us along to remind us of those great, great sentiments, right?
Love that, Kev.
Yeah, a holiday. Nonsense! I was tired, too, when I started this. Like, I felt just like Santa Claus, you know?
And you rallied. You came through just like Santa Claus. Yes. Kev.
Yeah.
You win the Mickey Rooney Santa Award today.
All right. And now let's go do a novena. No, was that? Yeah, wrong holiday. Let's go play with our advent calendars.
Absolutely.
And Kelsey, did you know what an advent calendar was?
Yes, I knew what an advent calendar was.
Yeah, I think.
Because we got chocolate. We got candy.
Yeah, of course. Yes. See? I don't think there might have been a chocolate one, but I had too many kids in the house. There would be no way that would last.
It was that weird fake chocolate back in the day where you didn't really like it, but you ate it anyways because it was the piece of candy that you got on a random day.
Yeah, because you didn't get it. Wasn't, again, and your family probably the same way. Getting candy was a big treat, wasn't it? You didn't get candy every time you went to the supermarket or whatever. Right?
No way. We didn't ask.
Never. Oh, we were taught. No. Yeah.
No way.
Asking was also a sin, Kelsey, just so you know.
You'll get nothing and like it.
Yes. Oh.
I feel like my dad kind of ran by that rule. If you ask, then you're never getting anything the rest of your life. My mom was more.
Oh, God, Kelsey. No wonder why we have so much in common. Yeah. No, we were. You were ashamed for asking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No. There was no asking. Yeah. Oh, what a wonderful time it was. All right, everyone. Merry Christmas, and we'll see you next week.
Merry Christmas.
Bye, bees.
Bye.
Heck, I don't believe in Santa Claus anymore. That's kid stuff, isn't it?
Just as I thought.
Just as I thought, too, Anne.
You don't believe in Santa Claus, do you, Dad?
Why, yes. Matter of fact, I do.
By the way, shout out to Mr. Thistlewaite. I wanted him as a dad.
Why,
Of course I
How come none of these parents beat you and had straps? I believe
in Too formal in the house, though.
Oh, it was so foreign to me. That's why I like TV, because I like the TV parents. But how great of a performer is Mickey Rooney? There's no question. But even though he's whispering this to begin, that he does exist. And he's doing it with the raspy voice and the stuffed up nose. And like Christian mentioned, he's only in his 50s here.
I know, I didn't realize that. And it's making his voice all crackly. It's just brilliant.
I thought Mom was a little dazed in this.
Yeah,
Dad has a great voice.
Yes, I think Mom was laser focused, Kev.
Yeah, I think she was too. And I like the picture with the little sailor outfit. That was a big thing too back then. And
yes,
I think we need to put more kids in sailor outfits.
Let's do it.
Yeah, why not? I'm gonna
Kev,
do it.
Did you have a sailor outfit? Are you feeling some?
No, I don't think so. Oh, you know what? Maybe like one. I think I did. Maybe.
With the blue flap.
I doubt it. I mean, you're not a sailor. Anyone's gonna think you're a sailor.
Even how to swim.
Yeah. Listen up, Kelsey. And tell me, son, what is real to you? Yeah, what is real to you, Kelsey? Just be beside the cross. And I love the meaning of just believe.
Yeah.
Like you believe in love. Like, why can't you believe in Santa Claus?
Right.
The spirit of giving and the spirit of, you know, I think there was much more to this.
That's everything in one word, in right? One sentence.
Yeah, wipe it from your mind. Although, Kelsey, I will say, Santa is pointing at Iggy, and that is an act of violence. Am I correct?
So okay. Spot on, yeah.
Yep.
Santa was a little aggressive there.
Yes.
Yeah, Mom's looking a little not well.
Well, she's on, like Ann said, she's probably on something.
Got the Ativan going.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot back then.
Plus, she had to wear that dress doing housework.
Look at Iggy in the tear. I forgot. Oh. Iggy cried. All right, buddy. No.
Your niece is right, Ann. Those tears are weird.
Well, she hates the tears.
It's an animated thing, but it's a beautiful moment. I'm sorry. I can't even get
it
there.
Is beautiful.
I think it's really sweet that Iggy cried and had a nice little redemption.
Thank you, Iggy. You know?
And again, that's, I don't know. I you don't see a lot of that today either, I don't think. Right? No. Everyone just believes what they believe, and then that's it.
Correct.
It's like, let me
There's
get
no
as,
conversations
let's
about it.
Let's get as much data to support my beliefs.
Right. Yep.
And in the words of Cartman on South Park, screw you guys.
Screw you guys.
You guys, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.